Hi everyone, welcome to What I Cried About, a podcast all about life in your 20s and the many reasons it gives us to cry. My name is Julia, and each episode I'll be interviewing a new volunteer to learn what they cried about this week and hopefully find some lessons in the process. Thanks for listening, and welcome to What I Cried About. Welcome to What I Cried About, Season 2. We're on the first episode. This is so exciting. If you didn't join us for Season 1, welcome. I definitely recommend that you check those episodes out. But if you were with us for Season 1, we're really happy to have you back. I'm so excited to get this one started. We're changing some things up, and we have some really exciting guests, so I can't wait to share everything with you all. Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to introduce today's guest.
Hi, everyone. So I'm Ethan. I am another hopeless Zoomer. I am working my way through all this. It's quite a confusing time. I met Julia my freshman year, I believe.
Yes.
And I'm an economics and psychology major. And I kind of just love music and sports and other things, movies, all that good stuff. Yeah. And I'm 21.
Thank you so much for being here, Ethan. I'm so excited. It's crazy to think that we met 4 years ago because I feel like I've known you forever.
Yeah, we're neighbors our sophomore year.
Yeah. Yeah, that was so great. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was. I love that about college too. Just the fact that so many people are outgoing and friendly. And
yeah.
When you meet a bad apple, you're just like, fuck it.
I know. It's definitely weird now because we can't meet people anymore. I definitely had that expectation for my senior year, and now that is not happening.
Yeah, it's a pretty uniquely horrible experience for our class, but
there are many more years in the future to meet really cool people, so that's what keeps me going. Well, thank you so much for being here. First ever episode of Season 2. I'm so glad that we were able to make it here. I cannot thank you all enough for your support, and I hope that you enjoy the season going forward. So with that, Ethan, I want to ask you, what did you cry about that you want to share with us?
Quite a lot. I think there's so many different types of crying that like I could kind of nitpick apart different examples. Like there are like those romantic heartbreaks that like really suck so much, and I cried really hard about those. And there's like the most random little like surface level cries too, like times I will shed tears over like almost nothing, or just like something I'm just like seeing, or it feels like a little wave and then it like comes and goes. And there's a lot in the middle there, but I think something that I think maybe not everyone does, that I will get more emotional about other people being emotional than myself personally. And I think it's really hard because I like appear big masculine man.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of grew up like still adhering to those like norms, like repressing emotions and things like that. And I really did like all throughout high school. And then I got to college and I started like growing as a person and like trying to express emotion better and be more open and comfortable with who I am. But I think it still gets difficult sometimes. So I find myself, I will outlet more emotion when other people are emotional rather than have me be like the one who, like, I don't often just like cry about things in general. But when I'm with friends or someone else that needs that support, I find it very easy to like cry with them.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of how I outlet a lot of emotion that I'm trying better to not repress.
So has that been something that you've been dealing with a lot recently? How does that relate to life right now when we're not seeing anyone?
Yeah, it definitely does appear right now because we're kind of like in this like dredge of, I don't even know if that's a word, but like everything's so different and like dreary. And I do have friends that have gone through things recently, and that's kind of when I noticed it. I had a friend who was questionably going through a breakup and things like that. And I was there for him like I wanted to be. And I felt more emotional connection to his problems than I do to my own almost, where like on my day-to-day life, I kind of just shove everything down. I just shove it all the way down and pretend like it doesn't exist. And I outlet it different ways. Like, I don't think I'm like by any means like a time capsule, like, or like something like that. Like, I've learned how to like outlet it through like going to the gym and spending time with friends and laughing and kind of like cathartically working it out that way. But I think I still struggle to really be so emotionally expressive sometimes. Like, I feel like it's just ingrained in me based on like the way my parents raised me, at least, to like just kind of be strong boy, no cry type. So It's weird because times are changing and you don't have to be like that anymore. In like 30 years ago, like, everyone was like that probably.
Yeah. What have you noticed that's been impacting you that has made you like think about that?
What do you mean?
Like, you're saying, oh, the times are changing, and what are the indicators that you're finding are bringing you to like that conclusion?
I think I was kind of like raised in like a, like, my parents were like older by than like the average parent things, and like I grew up watching like older TV shows and things because I didn't have cable, and like the way that all of that culture, like, I intook it as a kid, they're very different than now. Like, times have changed like exponentially quickly. Like, we are as a generation so much different, and it's really fun, obviously. Like, we're having a great time. We have memes and things. But so I like look at what I know like my older cousins to be like versus my friends from here. And when I meet people like you and other RAs, I guess is a good place to say, like, that was a place where I kind of realized a lot of the emotional openness of like people in our generation. It's great. Apparently, it's also, this is a little tangent, but it's a lot like that in like Europe, from what I've heard, in places like Brazil as well, where there's a much more like open environment to all these things. So it is like a cultural based thing. I have a friend who's from Brazil, and she talks all the time about how everyone there is so loving and like open and hugging and like constantly showing that love towards each other.
Right. And it's like
it's very expressive, I guess. Okay. Is what it means. I think where I'm from, like, that wasn't like a thing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came to school and I started meeting RAs and things, or like, I guess, becoming an RA and things like that, and even before that, like, meeting my RAs, like, they kind of had a big impact on me.
Right.
Where I was like, oh, you can be like very emotional and supportive of these things. And I think that's kind of where I realized that like crying is a valid option and things like that. And I know that's such a, like, for a podcast based around like the most powerful emotion in some ways and the most cathartic feeling, like, I didn't realize that was a thing until like 4 years ago. Like,
right. Yeah, no.
And I think it's really good though. There are things that make me cry, but the main things that I remind me of now are when I see like people I love thriving and people I love getting that next big step in their life or something like that. Like, that is like something that has like made me feel a lot. And then there's the flip side where there's someone that I love that's like struggling right now, and I feel for them more than I feel for myself too a lot of the time, where I don't know why that is and if that's a problem or not. Because, like, obviously you should try and put yourself first and things. But it's very conflicting and confusing inside. But I know that I feel, like, such a true emotion towards seeing other people express emotion for some reason. And it makes me happy or sad. But I don't think there's really a set emotion tied to crying at all.
I really understand what you mean about the seeing your friends, like, feeling those kind of things on behalf of other people, the examples that you gave particularly, because I don't know, I think it's like you feel good when you do something. So, well, actually, maybe sometimes you don't. You might do something good and not even like notice or like give yourself the recognition. But if you really care about someone and you watch them be happy and you watch them do something good, like, that feeling is like the most pure like sense of warmth I think I've ever felt in my life. Like, watching like my brother, my brother comes to me with like really good news about something that happened in his life, like, I feel so like I could like run a marathon and I didn't even do anything, you know. And at the same time, I have a niece, and it's not that I so much am like sitting here worried about her all the time or whatever. There are times when I do feel that way, but like you said, it's interesting because you should quotes like put yourself first, but sometimes someone else can be such a like just a bigger motivator for things. Like my drive to like go to work and do a bunch of different things is so much bigger when I think about how I might need to act if my niece needed me versus just to put myself in a safer place.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I think that's a great way to put it, is to be a motivator and having those things as a motivator, because yeah, like a lot of people around me at school are like my biggest motivators, where like there is that drive from within. But like I think your point about the niece is really interesting, because I can't even imagine like having a child, like how much of a motivator that would be. Like it sounds like it would be like to just have that much attachment and love for them that you would do anything. And
right,
so that's a really good point. And I think there's a lot of love between like things like that too, where like I remember, like, even this is a small example, but it's relative to both of us, which is the day that we both got hired as RAs.
Oh yeah.
And I remember that it was like a good example, because I was so happy for you, despite knowing that you were going to get it like 100%, obviously. I remember you were crying, and I remember that made me like tear up and cry a little too, where I was like,
crying so hard.
I was like, this is incredible. Like that was such a good highlight of a moment, and it felt so like powerful in your chest, and like it feels like so warm, and I don't know, like overwhelming
feeling. Yeah.
Happiness.
I like that you I like how you describe it with warmth. Like I did also, like, so because it's a podcast, you can't see me or Ethan, but like as we're doing this, we're moving our hands around our body, and I feel like a piece of feeling things that gets lost is like actually where you feel it. Like have you ever seen those, you know, those diagrams of like where emotions show up? But
yeah,
sometimes you can figure out what you're feeling based on where you're feeling it. And like I know if I get very anxious, usually my stomach hurts or like my head feels like dense. But like when I feel, like you said, when you feel that like warmth of like a good feeling, like it feels like, for me, I feel like a chill in my spine, or like I feel like in my chest just feels like it's trying to expand. Like it's so interesting how you can actually, like they're called feelings, but but sometimes we're like, oh, it's just in our head, but no, you can actually feel them, and they can be really overwhelming, like you're saying.
Yeah, it's all intertwined in there. Like your physical and your mental capabilities are all intertwined. And yeah, like it just feels like a balloon in your chest, kind of, is how I describe it. Like it's very, it feels warm, and then like you feel it kind of like, you almost feel like if it's like a really powerful, ecstatic, like happy emotion, like it almost like rises up through your neck, and you feel like the balloon's gonna like lift you off the ground almost. Mm-hmm. And that's like one of the best feelings in the world. Like it really is.
It really, it's incredible.
It's not something that happens every day.
Like, no, it's just that much more special.
Yeah. It's not like your average, like, it's not even like a weekly thing to me, at least. I don't know. Maybe there are people that are just that happy all the time, and I'm happy for them. But for me, like, I can't even tell you like the last 5 or 6 times that I've like felt like that emotionally happy for someone. I don't know. I think a lot of it just depends on where you are in your life right now.
Yeah.
And it's been a wild 2020 / start of 2021. So there's definitely not, it doesn't feel like there's that much to be supremely happy about sometimes, but I think that only makes it more special when it is.
Right.
When it's there, and you got to appreciate it.
Has the past like few, oh well, almost a year now, which is actually incredible to think about, but you were saying that, you know, you're noticing the way things manifest for you when you're with someone versus being alone. So how has the past year of all of this impacted that? Like,
yeah,
has it changed it for you?
Yeah, I think that it definitely has. There's a lot of feelings, and there's a lot of, obviously the last year was kind of wild for everyone. Around March 1st or whenever, my life just like completely got flipped upside down. And for more reasons than just COVID and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has been such an insane year looking back, and I don't need to give people a history of like my day-to-day through quarantine. Like, you get the idea. I did what I could to stay working and stay busy, but it's really recently that I've really started feeling really happy about being alone almost. I think before that I thrived a lot more. I was a lot more extroverted, which is surprising because I'm an only child. Mm-hmm. I was very extroverted the last 2 or 3 years of my life. And it got to a point where I felt very like needy almost, or like dependent on other people's attention and things like that. And not even like attention, but just like presence, I guess.
Okay.
So now there's like, I've kind of made this jump where I'm like, I want to be alone. I want to just remember when I used to be happy about those things. And that's helped build like a different and foster like a different emotional ground for me. And okay. And this has really just been the last few weeks since like the start of 2021. And I think I'm in like a whole different mental space now where I can kind of look back at things more objectively and like with less like anxiousness towards them. And I can look at like lowlights or highlights that have happened in the last like year or 4 years of my life and feel more comfortable with them, I guess. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
I think so. I know it does.
It was a little tangenty, I feel like, but
no, it's a very different experience, I think, as someone who is an only child versus, I mean, because I go home and I have my sibling singular, and I do have another sibling, but he doesn't live with us, so I had to catch myself. As people have gone into more isolated states and they haven't been under the social pressures of a normal operating world, a lot of people I've talked to, that has really changed them. And personally, like, that has really changed a lot of the ways I think about myself. But when I go home, I still have my sibling.
Yeah.
To kind of bounce that energy off of. And I know dynamics with parents are different, and they can be hard for a lot of people, but I feel like that doesn't, the expectations from siblings or parents are different. So when you go home and you are arguably a little more isolated, because you don't have a sibling there or someone just to interact with constantly, besides a parent, because parent dynamics are different. But so how has that affected the way you've been thinking about things recently?
Yeah, going home and being an only child is, it's very different. And it's funny, like, I don't really know too many people that are like that. But it was really difficult during quarantine. It was like one of the most frustrating and overwhelming times, and like no one knew what was going on, and it was so extremely overwhelming. And I think one of the biggest things was the fact that I really didn't have anyone to really bounce it off of. Like, I wasn't talking to me, I prefer, I don't like talking over the phone like that much. Like, it worked when it could, but I prefer like being in person and being able to read people's body language and things. And so being stuck at home and not really having anyone that I felt could relate to me and bounce ideas off of, bounce emotions off of, like you did, was extremely frustrating. And so I got back into kind of older habits I had from high school of just feeling very like just shoving it down and kind of going about it the wrong way a lot of the time, I think, or becoming almost uncomfortable with it again, like kind of like regressing, I guess, is how you would say
it. So when you found yourself regressing, how did that impact your day to day? How did that affect you?
So for me, when I was regressing, it became feeling way more numb towards a lot of things. And I think there's only so much we can do about it, like as humans in quarantine for the first time ever. Like, yeah, it's not the most fun time, obviously, like, but for me personally, I felt as though the lack of social interaction was leading me to feeling way more numb about things. Like, I wouldn't get out of bed at all and things like that. And I wouldn't handle social situations the same way I felt like I used to. I would handle them a lot more like straightforwardly and not as openly, I guess. And I felt like that's how I was handling it, where it was just kind of getting used to kind of repressing everything. I think a lot of that was that I was hurting a lot on the inside, and I was going through a lot of deeper personal changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really want to show that to anyone. So I just tried to act as like normal and regular as possible, as opposed to being like me, which is what I obviously want to do.
So how does that come out then? What is normal and regular versus being you?
Well, normal is a dumb word, honestly. Like, I think that's probably the correct word. But normal is definitely the incorrect word. But for me, normal is a lot like what I picture like high school me to be like. High school me was like invisible in a lot of ways. Like, I was like so quiet, and I didn't have much interest in like trying new things or meeting new people. I kind of just existed, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like seeds there of me being like very like capable and mature emotionally, but I didn't really know how to like really plant those seeds or like let them grow at all. Like,
mm-hmm.
And it basically just ended up with me being like the most prototypical, like sportsy, emotionally immature guy. Like, I really didn't do much. I really didn't talk to many people at all either. I had no interest in being popular or anything, mm-hmm. which isn't a bad thing by any means, but like, I didn't really have interest in anything, I feel like. And so then when I went to college is when I started learning and kind of trying to grow as a person and taking opportunities. Like, I like did not talk to girls in high school, like at all. Like, the only girls I talked to were the friends of my friends, basically. Okay. And that was like it. And I was the most like awkward cis male you could ever imagine. Then like college is when I felt like I started growing and growing emotionally through different situations and trying new things and learning all these new things. And it was great. And then I started feeling more and more as I was regressing, as I was stuck back at home with my parents and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Because I know you as just such a nice, outgoing, friendly person. Like,
yeah.
Thinking about you not talking to anybody and not doing things is very contrast to who I know you as.
Yeah, it was very different. Like, I made more friends in like a month than I had at home. Like, as much as I love some of my friends from home, like, I felt like I took a whole new look on it when I came here. So I get why that's kind of funny to you, because I was really different. I was like the least outgoing person ever, like at home. I just had no interest in it. I don't know why. I think it might have been kind of similar things, honestly. It might have been feeling like embarrassed about things. Like, my family was not very wealthy, or as much as I do love my parents, like very functional either. And so I think a lot of times I was like a little afraid to like let people be close to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, when I came to school, I was like, this is great. Like, I can be like, I don't have to worry about that. I can just be here and right. be myself and things. And I think that's kind of where the big turning point happened for me, where I started realizing the different wealths of emotion and like power of like opening up to people in a way. And it's still hard sometimes, but it's always good to try new things, I guess. It's one of the things I learned here.
That's the great thing about college. Well, it's the great, and it goes both ways. It can be great or not, is that it throws so many things at you at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And you see how you respond to them. And sometimes it's wonderful, and sometimes it's very overwhelming. Sometimes it's both. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How did your stressors change from being in high school to coming to college? Like, in this transition of being able to be here, what did that bring up for you?
Yeah, I don't know, because it's so funny being a senior and like being, you're like one step away from like the depressed coffee drinking adult that you are. You are.
We're not already there.
But like, you're really on the edge. And I look at freshman year me, and I just cannot understand what happened, because I used to be so carefree and happy about everything. Like, my freshman year of college, I was just happy. Like, I could not tell you anything besides that. And now I'm like, how did you get here? What happened? Now it's like the anxieties and the stressors have kicked in and things are different. So what was your question again? Kind of tangented, but.
Well, I mean, I guess it's a different question now because I was asking about the transition of high school and college, because I can tell you my freshman year, I was not happy at all. But since you were happy and you said, like you said, now we're here, why do you think that is?
Yeah, there's a lot, obviously. I think the biggest thing, and all of the dumb parts of me don't want me to say it, but like, it's just, like a lot of it was getting into a first relationship and then going through that first breakup, which was fairly recent for me. And it was really, really brutal breakup, because it was right at the same exact time quarantine happened. And it was kind of like this double whammy. And I think a lot changed with that, where like I felt like I came out of like a dream, I guess.
Okay.
Where like I felt like the first 3 years of school were great. And like I loved it. And all these things were going my way. And then March 2020 happened. And everything kind of flipped. And I think this is like the first time in months that I've really felt like a clear head and functional enough to like talk about these things, because for the last 8 months or so, a lot of it was just a coping process and a lot of internal gazing and like analyzing and things like that, trying to cope and move on and things like that. And I feel really good now that I'm here, but like I'd be lying if things didn't like have to happen along the way. Like shout out to a couple of my closest friends who were there for me, like for those, like really, this is like you're getting a live example, and I know the body language isn't really seen on the podcast, how hard it is for me to like talk about these things, because I want to use words like pathetic and things like that, or like I want to say like the pathetic crying, like the so hard, like things like that. But it's not pathetic, it's normal. Like a lot of people do that when they go through breakups, and it's really hard for me to admit that, because I went through like 3 or 4 of those like ugly crying sessions where you're just like, you're just exhausted at the end of it.
Yeah.
Like nothing else. And it's so hard to admit that. It really is. Like it makes me feel uncomfortable still, even though I know I have no reason to feel that way.
Right, but you do have a reason. But I think we don't think it's a good one. But
yeah.
Still, that really affects things. And I was talking about this, about like my conversation with Max. We were talking about how like sometimes the biggest part of it isn't so much the feeling that you're feeling about it, but then the shame that's attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though you in your head are like, oh, like crying's okay, like that's fine, you know, like this is normal, people breakups are painful, the shame follows along with it, and then you get this confused amalgamation of, well, I feel like this, but why? Like, I shouldn't, but I should, because I do. Like, what? It's hard to find somewhere to go with that.
Yeah, I think shame is a great term. I never really applied to it, because that is how I feel. Like, I feel ashamed that I'm, like, even admitting these things, because it's really funny, like, how many people just assume I'm, like, well, like, not even assume, but just, like, how do I say this? Like, how many people have the impression of me that I'm just, like, Ethan the dude, or, like, I don't know. I feel like to a lot of people, I never really show that side of me. And it's only to like people I trust and closer people that really get to know there's like the other emotional side. And so to a lot of them, like those fringe people, they're the ones that I would feel like ashamed for, where I'm like, or ashamed that they know, because they know me kind of, but they don't know me enough that I feel like I'm afraid of that judgment for some reason.
Right. Because it would change their perception of you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that perception then one that you want to uphold it? Because if not, would you feel so bad about them seeing that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a real flip of the coin, in my opinion. I really don't know. Like, I guess that leaves it up to, if I'm open to letting them see my true character, then I guess that just leaves them, I will see their true character and if I made the right choice or not.
Right.
Because there's people out there who won't understand. And I guess at some point I have to graduate to saying, fuck them. Can I swear on here? Oh, lit. Okay. It's
like, I don't know if I can. Yeah, it's all good. So you're afraid of their reaction then?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of me that is really self-conscious about these things, about like deeper emotions and things like that. And it's really hard to like work through, because before this point in my life, I have cried like really hard in front of two people in person and then two over FaceTime during quarantine. And so like, it really is like, only I feel like there's so many people, even some of my closest friends, like I don't show that emotion around. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because I feel very self-conscious about it still. I think that's kind of like something I grew up thinking, at least, or like feeling judged or anxious about it. And that's kind of where like I feel like I want to like help myself and help other people like that too, like kind of grow and understand that it's all good.
Where do you think that fear comes from? Like what goes through your mind when you think about these other people seeing you in that light? Like, what do you think would be the consequence? I don't mean, you might know it's, you know, maybe irrational or whatever, but what's the consequence that comes along with thinking, oh, if they see me like this, then what?
Oh, I think there's a lot of different reasons, and they're all 100% irrational. The first one for me is mostly that I just am like the least confrontational person ever. Like, I hate confrontation. I hate issues. I hate conflicts. I just want to like go with the flow, kind of. So when that moment does happen and they are like emotionally, there's like, you know, that like wake up call where you're like, oh, wow, something serious is going on here. I hate being in the middle of that. So I think that's like my main reason for suppressing a lot of it. I think some of it is also like, I think there are deeper ties to like that toxic masculinity where I kind of like, I don't know why I shove it down, but besides like, why am I embarrassed? Why do I think that they think things like Ethan's not manly or Ethan's not like, I don't think it's that. I don't really know what it is. I guess it's just really irrational. Yeah. So like it's either the fact that I just don't want to be the center of attention. I've never wanted to be the center of attention. I've always just wanted to exist. I think that's probably a big one, honestly. I think there are other reasons, like the way people perceive me, and maybe that comes from not being as confident in myself as I should be, but that's all open to different people's perception, I guess.
Right. There's so many, you'll never know how people actually perceive you, and how they perceive you is never actually who you are. So yeah. You think too much about that. That's a fun little spiral to get into, but
yeah, that's a very good way to put it though.
Yeah. It's like, oh, cool.
None of it matters.
None of it matters. But that's the thing, is I used to be very afraid of that. And I think I try to spin that in the opposite way, where it's like, if no one, okay, if there's so many perceptions of me that no amount of effort or energy will ever make them all be the one that I want people to have, then why did I even try? And like, in like the best way possible though, like, why? I don't want to spend my life putting out all this energy to try to change people's perceptions of me. Mm-hmm. When it's an impossible task. Like, to me, that's a perfect example of when to give up on something. Like, just be yourself. But like, of course, it's not that I never feel that. And that's a much more recent way of thinking. Like, people's perceptions of you can have real life consequences and impacts, which is really unfortunate, because it's not always, people make assumptions and things are incorrect. So when you try to manage those, it can easily just feel like you have a million things happening at once, because how can you manage everything that people think about you, and what would you even do with that information, you know? But I think your response of pushing it down or just handling it a different way is like a really common like thing for guys to do, especially, I mean, guys that I've talked to have given a similar thing where they'll say, oh, like, you know, it doesn't really bother me, like, it's whatever, like, I just deal with it. Like, they might like take it in, and I don't know if anyone watching has, you know, watched Avatar. I hope you have, but I'm gonna use an Avatar example right now. So you like, if someone like, you know, if someone's throwing something at you and they like catch it and bend it back around, like that diversion of energy, I feel like is what a lot of guys I know do essentially, is they're like, oh, I'm upset, so I'm going to go do a different activity and just divert the energy out.
Oh, that is a great reference. Oh my God, I'm so happy. That's an A1 way to put it. Yeah, for me, I just like catch it and then I'm like, I'm going to go listen to like rappers yell at me while I wait, and then that's it. And then I'm happy again. That's how my brain works.
Right. It's like, it's kind of like it passed through you, you know, like it came and it went. I feel like it's how I imagine it in my head. It makes me think of like how, and like one perception that a lot of us have is this like picture of someone who's emotional. This is actually a question that I don't know. Because the people who are closest to me in my life, I think, would describe me as emotional, and I would describe myself as that. I wouldn't have in the past, because I would have thought it was like embarrassing. But like now the way I think of it, I'm like, do I experience emotions? Yes. Do they impact me? Yes. Okay, so I'm emotional. Like, isn't that most people? But that's what I mean. Like, this image of emotional that we have in our heads, like, isn't what you described, but it's like, why is that the case, you know? Like, you could describe yourself as emotional by just like, that's how you process it. I don't know, does that make sense?
I think it's pretty insane, like, thinking about it like that we have a societal norm that emotional can almost relate to like unstable or in some ways, whereas like, we're humans, 100% of us have emotions. We are all emotional for the There are some of us vary in different ways. Some people use different emotions differently, but we are all emotional. It's getting over that little stereotype or that emotional means this or that, that is so difficult to a lot of us.
Whenever I think of people and their perception of emotional, I always think about this one thing. Okay. And I, like, you know this, people who know me know this, but I'm obsessed with words and their usage and origins and changings in meaning. So like the word hysterical, right? That means if someone's hysterical, that paints a picture of them being overwhelmed and messy and probably crying or just expressing a really intense output of emotion, okay? So I learned that hysterical comes from a Greek word, which I don't remember the exact word, but the base of hist, it's like histe or whatever, is the same base of the word hysterectomy, which is when a uterus is removed, because that is the word in Greek for uterus.
Really?
And so the word hysterical, a dramatic display of emotion in response to something, comes from the same source of removing a woman's uterus, because they used to think that having a uterus could lead to symptoms of insanity. Like, those things were connected. And now we have this word hysterical, which just has such deep roots in, oh, women are emotional and crazy. And so it's like things like that, you might not even realize they're there, but then.
That's incredible.
It is. I was like, huh, like, hysterical, hysterectomy, like those, I wonder if those are the same. And I looked it up and they are. They're from the same source.
That's so I will never look at that word the same way again.
Right? I was like, are you serious?
Oh my God. Man, those gender norms were real different back then.
Real.
It's Yeah, I think the gender norms maybe aren't that much different nowadays, though, in some ways. I think at least for guys, I feel like they've been very stagnant the last X number of centuries in a way, almost. Like, I feel like they've kind of been rock solid. I don't know. I maybe women have been too, but in terms of the way they, each gender is perceived to handle emotion differently, based on what the Greeks thought, at least.
So before we go to final thoughts, we're going to start a new segment for season two, where I ask on Instagram, if you don't follow us at What I Cried on Instagram. But on Instagram, I asked our followers what was something that they cried about. So what we're going to do is read a few of those responses and try to offer some thoughts about them. And yeah, this will be something that we're going to keep up in the next few episodes, as long as you like it. So let us know, leave us a review, send us a DM, anything like that, and follow us on Instagram so you can submit what you cried about every week. But with that, I'm going to start reading a few of them right here. Okay, so this person says that they cried about a video of firefighters doing a little parade for healthcare workers. Okay, that's adorable.
That's so wholesome.
That is so wholesome.
We gotta support those first line workers out there.
We really do. I don't think they're ever gonna get enough like public credit for what's going on right now.
That's a good thing to cry about, though.
Firefighters, America's heroes right there. And mailmen. We love them. Oh, so this person cried because they had both a positive and a negative corona test, so they had to isolate because they weren't sure which was actually correct.
That is frustrating, right?
Yeah. There. Because I know someone too who had a false positive, and of course, like, it really shakes up your life. I know that, you know, not being able to do anything for 2 weeks is really be a hassle, but for the sake of staying healthy, I see it as worth it. I know some people do not, but I would rather falsely isolate than accidentally give a lot of people I know the coronavirus. But
no, I was just gonna say, definitely, like, I basically work calling people to let them know the next 2 weeks of their lives are going to be ruined, and some are not too happy about it, and some don't care, and some are just happy. They're like, oh great, I don't have to go to work. And so there's a lot of different ones. So I can understand how something as confusing and undetermined as the positive and negative, that's just got to be a little overwhelming, honestly. You're like, well, what am I doing here? What's going on? Mm-hmm. My fate is in the hands of these little swabs.
That's true. So this person says, I really miss my friends and hanging out without worrying about it. Yeah.
I think we can all relate to that one for sure. Yeah. So much. That's one of the worst feelings throughout the last 8 months.
Definitely.
I think that was well worded too, just to the point.
Right. Not even just missing your friends, because of course, but even if, because people are seeing people now for the most part, and it's like, you know, you pick who you're seeing, but I agree that, like, I still have that concern.
Mm-hmm.
Hitting me in the back of my mind, even though I'm trying to be careful, it's still, I would never want to put someone else in that position.
Yeah, definitely.
We're coming up on like the year, and I was thinking about it because people were still posting like, oh, a year ago today I was at this club or whatever, you know, we were all hanging out and maskless, right? And even mm-hmm. I went to a concert like right before the pandemic, like the last possible day before it reached New York was when we went, and like we had bought the tickets way in advance, right? So we didn't even know if it was going to still be on as the news was coming out and everything like that. And like, we're getting to the point where people's memories aren't going to be maskless anymore, which is so wild to me.
The memories for the next year are just going to be very bland. And yeah, it's like the year that didn't exist in a lot of ways.
I just wake up every morning like, this is weird.
Yeah, at some point maybe we'll get used to it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think, like, a lot of us want to, but
yeah, like for me, like, I could really relate with what that person was saying for sure. And that's a big reason I came back to school earlier, is because the main people I feel guilty about are my parents, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I come back to school, I don't really see, I have like a strict bubble, basically.
Right, with being an RA and everything.
Yeah, so I just kind of feel better off here than I do there, and kind of takes the pressure off. But at some point, things are like, are we just going to adjust and assume this is normal? Or like, is the vaccine going to hit? And then it becomes all of this, like, how do we unite as we move away from this? Like, are people going to be smarter and less gross in general and things like that? Because if you think about some stuff that like the way you would act, like even just you in person before COVID, like there's a lot of things that each of us like probably would do before COVID that we will never do again anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Even just like hand sanitizer or like all sorts of different stuff.
Yeah, it's really been challenging a lot of things that we do and being like, okay, but why? I think the best and maybe only good thing to come out of this is curbside pickup at restaurants. Great idea. Why have we not been doing that? So easy.
I think there's a lot. I think there's been a bunch of really good ideas. I think that's a great one for sure. I think there's a lot of questions about like sporting events and things and concerts going forward, but I think we'll revert back and like not care again. But like, it's pretty insane how like we were just so good with like going into a mosh pit and like just completely like swapping saliva with like 13,000 different people, and now we're just like, no, like we just got our mask on, we're just like standing 6 feet away, or like don't get near me.
Literally like a few months in, I was like, oh, what I wouldn't give to have a stranger like sweat on me right now and like spill their beer on my foot. Like, that's pure joy.
What I wouldn't give to be at the good old Rat in Binghamton right about now.
I was thinking of concert. I've actually never been to the Rat.
I've been more times than I'm proud to say. And I don't know. I mean, it's probably dumb. It's probably my career there is retired. Hang the jersey up, but it's whatever.
Maybe I'll come back years from now and go one time.
Like MJ for the Wizards.
For our last one, this person cried about fictional characters, and in parentheses they write, I just finished reading Normal People. So first of all, Normal People was heart-shattering. I don't even know, I couldn't tell you what actually happened in that story. Like, it was one of those ones with like barely any plot, but just like really in-depth characters and the way they interacted with each other. I don't know if have you watched it even?
I know nothing about it.
So it was a book. It's by Sally Rooney. And it was like one of those, like, it was one of the popular contemporary reads for 2020, like in the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. It was like that one in like, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? And like a few others that were like circulating. So I read it on audiobook and I was like, oh my God, like I cried. And then they came out with a Netflix show about it. Mm-hmm. So. But have you cried over fictional characters?
I have. They're very different than normal people. But I have cried. I don't know if I've ever cried of a book. I probably have, actually, but I don't remember because I stopped reading books because I'm just dumb. But the big one for me, if you don't count Marley, because everyone's cried at Marley.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the normal one. I have shed many a tear to Albus Dumbledore's passing.
Oh my God.
I don't know why, but that one just hit differently for me. I was so sad. Like, I knew it was coming too, but I just thought it was so, I don't know. It was like, I was just like an emotional kid at the time, and there's like, they all put their wands up and I'm just like, no. And I'm just like, so sad.
That is sad.
That one definitely hit. I'm trying to think if there's others. I don't know. How about you?
I definitely cried just on Harry Potter. I definitely cried at Robert Pattinson's character in the fourth one.
Yeah.
That was absolutely devastating, and I'm upset that I can't remember his name.
Cedric.
Oh my God, Cedric Diggory. When he died, I think that's like the peak of the movie. I mean, the series, yeah. I think it starts to come down after that, and not like in quality or anything, but like the storyline. For me, that's like the halfway point of
definitely
him being like, oh my God, this is about to go down. But that was just also a crazy ending to a movie.
Yeah, no, 100%. I don't remember if that one ever got me or not, but it definitely is, like, on rewatch, I, like, cannot bear to watch it. I'm like, no, run. Like, every time. It's very powerful.
I did cry at that show that I was talking about, One Piece. They have, like, an origin story for one of the characters. Like, the beginning of his arc is, like, he wants to, like, become the greatest swordsman in the world, but he can never beat this girl that he trains with, and she's, like, amazing, right? So he's like, all right, when I beat her, I'll be the greatest swordsman. And this, he's, like, what, like, 10 years old at this point? And so, like, he's training with her for, like, 2 years, and then she dies.
Oh.
And so his, like, single dream of beating her is, like, not ever able to be realized. And just that whole storyline was just, like, I was sitting there, like, with my mouth, like, wide open. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of more animated shows that we've already discussed, yeah, Avatar got me a few times for sure. Like, things are, like, coming back, but Zuko and Iroh reuniting got me so good. That one makes me cry.
The vine.
That's exactly where I was going. Like, that one's really brutal too. And also when Aang gets separated from Appa makes me really sad, and I cry. When he, like, collapses into Katara's arms, that one always gets me. There's something so overwhelmingly, like, relatable to me about, like, feeling like that loss of, like, love, or like that, like, feeling of love that just gets me with those three moments for sure.
Yeah, that is such a good show. Twice we talked about Avatar. Look at us. All right, if you haven't watched Avatar, The Last Airbender,
get it together.
Let's watch it. All right, well, thank you everyone for sending those in. I really enjoyed reading them, and I look forward to seeing all your responses in the future. Thanks so much for sharing them with me, and thank you, Ethan, for joining me in that. So before we go, I just want to invite you to give your final thoughts for everyone listening. What do you want to leave us with before you go?
I want to leave with the fact that I think coming on here and talking about it was a personally good step for me, being able to talk about crying. And I just think that if you're listening, do things that make you uncomfortable, like, in a good way, obviously, because I feel better about it already. And I'm just happy to have been here and to kind of talk about all this. It was great.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of What I Cried About. Again, my name is Julia. If you enjoyed our show, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. We're at What I Cried About and What I Cried ABT on Twitter. You can find all of our links in the episode description and on whaticriedabout.com, where we also have all of our episodes and other links. So thanks again for listening. Hope you have a great day, and we'll talk to you again soon.